Welcome back, everyone. Today we're going deep into the book of Judges, specifically chapters 4 and 5.
Ah, the story of Deborah and Barak.
Yeah, you got it. And you know what's so cool about these chapters?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there.
Right. I mean, first you get the prose account of this epic battle.
And then, boom, you get the same story told again.
But as a song, it's like getting two sides of the same coin.
It's fascinating how ancient Israelites used different literary forms, to really drive the point home.
Totally. So we'll be diving into excerpts from Dr. David Howard's lectures on Judges.
He has some really interesting insights on how these two chapters work together.
Yeah. And he calls it a masterclass in interpreting the Bible.
Ooh, I like that.
Me too. Okay. So who are our main players here?
Well, first up, we've got Deborah. She's the fourth judge of Israel.
And definitely one of the most
For
fascinating.
sure. I mean, she's a prophetess. She's a judge settling disputes.
Oh, and wait, there's more. She ends up leading the Israelites into battle.
Talk about a multi-talented leader.
Seriously, she's the only female judge mentioned in the entire Bible.
Which, as Dr. Howard points out, is a pretty big deal.
Huge. He even mentions that a location called the Palm of Deborah was named after her.
Her own landmark.
I know, right? So clearly she made a lasting impact.
Definitely. But to understand her role, we need to understand the situation in Israel at the time.
Okay, so what kind of mess were the Israelites in?
Well, they were under the oppressive rule of King Jabin of Canaan.
Yikes, not good.
And his general, oh, this guy was brutal, Sisera.
What did he do?
He led an army with, get this, 900 iron chariots.
Whoa, 900. That's intense.
Iron chariots were a terrifying force back then. You can imagine how intimidating that must have
Oh,
been.
yeah. Not the kind of enemy you want to mess with.
And the Israelites had been suffering under their rule for 20 years.
So things were pretty dire.
Absolutely. They were desperate for a leader to deliver them from this oppression.
Enter Deborah, right.
Well, not so fast. The story actually introduces us to Barak first.
Oh, who's Barak?
He's the Israelite military commander, the one called upon to fight Sisera.
Okay, so why isn't Deborah leading the charge?
Well, that's where things get interesting. Barak seems hesitant,
Hesitant about what?
about leading the army without Deborah by his side.
Really? So it wasn't just that Deborah was a leader.
It's more like she was seen as essential for victory.
Wow, they really trusted her judgment, huh?
It seems that way. And when Barak asks her to go with him, she agrees, but with a condition.
Ooh, a condition. I like where this is going. What was it?
She delivers a prophecy.
A prophecy.
Yeah, she tells Barak that the victory will ultimately be attributed to a woman.
Okay, now that's interesting. Talk about subverting expectations. You don't usually hear about women getting the glory in ancient warfare.
Exactly. And this prophecy sets the stage for some pretty dramatic twists and turns in the story.
So does this prophecy point to Jael? Is she the woman destined to win the day?
You're on the right track. Jael is our second key female figure in this story.
Okay, so tell me about Jael. Who is she?
Well, as Sisera is fleeing from the battle, he seeks refuge in her tent.
Makes sense. He's probably desperate to get away from the Israelites.
Right. But think about it. She could have easily turned him away.
Or even handed him over to the Israelites. It seems like she had options.
Yeah, a lot of options.
Yeah.
But instead, she takes a very different path. And let me tell you, it's a pretty bold move.
So what does she do?
While Sisera is sleeping, she kills him with a tent peg.
Whoa. That's unexpected.
It's definitely not your typical heroic duel.
But man, talk about taking charge.
Right. It really throws a wrench into the whole who gets the glory question.
Yeah, it definitely complicates things. It seems like this story is less about individual heroes,
And more about how different people contributed to the Israelite success.
including women, which is pretty remarkable, especially for that time period.
Absolutely. And it gets even more interesting when you consider the bigger picture. Dr. Howard points out that not all Israelite tribes participated in every conflict.
Oh, really? So it wasn't like this unified front all the time.
Not necessarily. Some events probably happened concurrently, different battles and skirmishes happening at the same time.
It sounds like a pretty complex political landscape.
Oh, it definitely was. Shifting alliances, different tribes with their own interests.
So it's less about one big story and more about various pieces of the puzzle coming together.
Exactly. And in this case, Deborah and Barak primarily led tribes from Zebulun and Naphtali.
Okay, so it wasn't just a spontaneous uprising, but a more carefully orchestrated effort.
Right. They had to build a coalition strong enough to challenge the Canaanite dominance.
Which is super impressive considering the potential for internal conflicts.
Oh, absolutely. It speaks to Deborah and Barack's strategic skills, their ability to unite different groups under a common goal.
They weren't just military leaders, they were diplomats, negotiators.
It makes you wonder, are there parallels to leadership challenges today?
For sure. I mean, the need to build consensus, to navigate different interests.
Those are timeless challenges, especially in a diverse society.
Okay, so after this hard-fought victory, we get a victory song, right?
Yep, Judges 5, the Song of Deborah.
Which is interesting because it's actually attributed to both Deborah and Barack.
Suggesting a shared sense of triumph. It's a beautiful example of how they work together.
Okay, so what makes this song so special?
Well, it's not just a simple retelling of the battle. It's full of vivid imagery, powerful language, and a depth of emotion that goes way beyond a simple historical account.
So it's more about the feeling of the victory, the impact it had on them.
Exactly. For instance, it describes the earth trembling and heavens dropping as God marches into battle.
Whoa. So it's not just about their actions, but about God's involvement in the victory.
It's presented as this cosmic event, you know, where the forces of nature align to support the Israelites.
It really emphasizes the scale of the victory.
And their belief that they were fighting on the side of the divine.
This reminds me of what Dr. Howard said about comparing this song to the one sung by the Israelites after crossing the Red Sea in Exodus.
Oh yeah, great comparison. He uses those two examples to illustrate the differences between prose and poetry in the Bible.
It's a brilliant way to show how the Israelites used both forms of writing for different purposes.
Prose is straightforward, factual, here's what happened.
And poetry adds all those layers of emotion, symbolism, and deeper meaning.
It's like the prose gives us the just the facts version.
And the poetry helps us understand how they felt about it all.
Like, what did it mean to them? What do they learn from it?
So in Exodus 14, we get the prose account of crossing the Red Sea.
And then in Exodus 15, it's all about celebrating and thanking God through song.
And in Judges, we see the same pattern. Chapter 4 lays out the battle.
And chapter 5, the Song of Deborah, helps us experience the emotional depth of the victory.
And the Song of Deborah is definitely packed with emotion.
Absolutely. And we'll dive into those details next time.
Yeah, can't wait. This is just the tip of the iceberg, folks.
There's so much more to unpack in this story. Buckle up. You know, one thing that really struck me about Dr. Howard's lectures is how he breaks down the Song of Deborah.
Yeah, he goes beyond just, like, the storyline, right?
Exactly. He dives into the poetry itself, like the actual techniques they used.
You mean, like, the literary devices and stuff?
Yeah, like how they create a certain impact, you know, a feeling or an image.
I remember he compared it to the Exodus story.
Oh, that's right. In Exodus 14, we get that prose account of the Israelites crossing the Red Sea.
Yeah, and then in Exodus 15, bam, they burst into song.
He, like, this awesome pattern, right? Prose and then poetry.
And he was saying how both those forms of writing, they serve different purposes.
Totally. Like, some truths are better expressed through just straight up facts.
And others, well, they need that emotional punch that you only get from poetry. So the prose is like the skeleton, the basic framework.
And the poetry is like adding the flesh and blood, the heart and soul.
It makes it come alive, you know?
Think about it. Like, we remember songs way easier than we remember lists of facts.
Oh, absolutely.
Our brains just connect with that emotional stuff on a deeper level.
Makes sense. Okay, so back to the Song of Deborah. There are some pretty intense images in there.
Oh, yeah, tons. Yeah. Like when it describes the earth trembling and the heavens dropping.
You can almost feel it, right? Like the ground shaking beneath your feet.
It's powerful stuff. And that's what Dr. Howard calls figurative language.
Figurative language.
It's where the poet isn't, like, describing a literal event.
So the earth didn't actually shake.
Well, maybe not. But the point is, they're using these powerful images
to get a deeper meaning across.
Right. Like to express the awe and wonder they felt at that moment.
They saw it as an act of God, this incredible display of power.
And that power, it shook the very foundations of the world, at least metaphorically.
It makes you think, right? Like how differently they experienced the world back then.
For them, everything was connected to the divine, you know.
Storms, earthquakes, victories in battle.
They saw God's hand in everything. It's pretty amazing when you think about it.
Okay, so there's this other really interesting part in the song, in verse 24.
Oh, yeah. Things take a sudden turn, right?
The focus shifts dramatically to Jael.
It's like a spotlight shining on her.
And the way it describes her killing Sisera, so vivid. It's like watching a movie.
You can picture her. The tent, the tension, the swift action.
It's definitely not your typical hero story.
But it reminds us that, you know, even back then, roles weren't always so clear-cut.
Like women could be warriors, leaders, agents of change.
Absolutely. Jael's story flips the script on those traditional assumptions about women in ancient times.
She's not some passive bystander.
She's a key player who shapes the course of events.
And then there's this other amazing part in verse 27 where the poetry itself...
It kind of breaks down.
It's like the structure of the poem is mirroring Sisera's death.
Oh, wow, yeah. The lines get shorter and shorter.
Creating this sense of descent, you know, like life ebbing away.
Like you're right there in the tent with them watching it happen.
It's so powerful. And then just when we think we've reached the emotional peak.
We're suddenly transported to Sisera's homeland.
And we see his mother.
Anxiously waiting for her son to return home.
It's such a stark contrast, right? We go from the Israelite victory celebration.
To this raw, gut-wrenching grief.
It's heartbreaking.
And it reminds us that war has consequences for everyone.
It's not just a story about winners and losers.
It's about the human cost of conflict.
The pain and suffering that ripples outward.
And the poet doesn't shy away from showing us that. Sisera's mother, she's not just some faceless enemy.
She's a mother, a real person, who's lost her son.
And she's clinging to hope, you know, even though it's clear he's not coming back.
That part where she imagines him dividing the spoils of war.
It's tragic, that misplaced hope.
And then in the final verse, Deborah brings us back to reality. It's this powerful declaration of victory, but it's also...
a call for the destruction of their enemies.
Yeah, it's a reminder that this wasn't just some game.
It was a fight for survival.
And in the ancient world, those tribal loyalties, they were everything.
Defeat, it didn't just mean losing a battle. It could mean losing your land, your freedom, your entire way of life.
Wow. It's a lot to take in.
It really highlights the complexity of this whole story.
It's not just good versus evil, black and white.
It's about leadership, courage, faith, the brutal realities of war.
And it still resonates with us today.
Thousands of years later, those themes, they're still so relevant.
It's amazing how these ancient stories can still speak to us, you know?
They tap into something universal about the human experience.
The desire for freedom, the struggle for power, the consequences of conflict.
And that enduring power of hope, even when things seem hopeless.
It's a lot to unpack, but it's definitely worth exploring.
What are your thoughts? What stood out to you the most from everything we've talked about so far?
It's like you think you know about ancient societies.
And then boom, a story like this comes along and totally challenges your assumptions.
Yeah, like we often think of them as super patriarchal.
But here we have Deborah and Jael.
Two women who play such crucial roles in the whole thing.
It really makes you question those traditional views of women in ancient Israel.
Deborah, I mean, she's like the ultimate multitasker.
Prophetess, judge, military leader.
It's not just the titles, though. It's how she carries herself.
Totally. She's confident. She's strategic. She's decisive.
And she clearly commands respect. I mean, even Barak, the military guy.
He was hesitant to go into battle without her.
It shows you just how much they valued her judgment, you know?
Yeah, it's like they knew she was essential for victory.
She wasn't just there for show, she was a driving force.
And then Jael, talk about taking charge.
She sees an opportunity and bam, she goes for it.
It's like she didn't let social norms hold her back.
It makes you think about all the unsung heroes throughout history.
Especially women.
The ones who, like, maybe didn't get the recognition they deserved.
Right. They were doing amazing things, but history kind of forgot about them.
It's a reminder to dig a little deeper, you know?
Look beyond the surface. Consider those who might have been overlooked.
And I bet Jael's actions sparked some debate back then.
Oh, for sure.
Some people probably saw her as a hero.
While others, maybe not so much.
It shows that even within one society, there can be so many different perspectives.
Yeah, it's like a lesson for us today, too, you know? Just because a story is told one way.
Doesn't mean that's the only way to see it.
We have to engage critically with these texts, ask questions, consider multiple viewpoints.
And speaking of multiple perspectives, it was interesting how Dr. Howard talked about the tribal dynamics at play.
Yeah, it wasn't just this unified Israel against a common enemy.
It was way more complicated than that.
Different tribes, shifting alliances, the need to build coalitions.
It shows you the real challenges of leadership, you know?
Deborah and Barak, they had to navigate all of that.
Internal divisions, different interests.
And somehow, they had to get everyone on the same page.
That's tough, even today.
Absolutely.
So what can we take away from all of this? Like, what are the big lessons?
I think it's a story about courage, first and foremost.
Courage to lead, even when the odds are stacked against you.
And courage to challenge expectations, to defy limitations.
Yeah, and the power of collaboration too, right?
Absolutely. Like understanding that we can achieve so much more when we work together.
Even if we don't always agree on everything.
It's a reminder that these ancient stories, they still have so much to teach us today.
They offer timeless wisdom, inspiration.
They challenge us to think differently about ourselves, about the world.
And as we wrap up this deep dive into Judges 4 and 5,
I want to leave you with one final thought. Think about how the Song of Deborah paints this picture of ancient warfare.
The leadership, the societal roles, the clash between different cultures.
What insights can we draw from this? What can it teach us about courage, about faith, about resilience in the face of adversity?
Those are great questions. And on that note, I want to thank you all for joining us on this journey.
It's been a pleasure exploring these incredible chapters with you.
It's been fascinating, eye-opening, and inspiring. And we hope you'll join us next time for another deep dive into the scriptures.